reading from the last chapter of teachings of Queen Kunti. Srimad Bhagavatam verse 1843. Shri Krishna Krishna Sakha Vrishni Rishabhavani Drug Rajanya Vamshadahanana Pabargavirya Govinda Godvija Surarthi Haravatara Yogeshwarakila Guru Bhagavan Namaste. O Krishna, O friend of Arjuna, O chief among the descendants of Vrishni, you are the destroyer of those political parties which are disturbing elements on this earth. Your prowess never deteriorates. You are the proprietor of the transcendental abode, and you descend to relieve the distresses of the cows, the brahmanas, and the devotees. You possess all mystic powers, and you are the preceptor of the entire universe. You are Almighty God, and I offer you my respectful obeisances. So, Sri Krishna is Krishna, Krishna Sakha, friend of Arjuna, Vrishni, Rishabhavani Drup. And amongst the descendants of Vrishni, you are the destroyer of all those political parties which create disturbance. Rajanya Vamsha Dahana. Rajanya Vamsha Dahana means to destroy those political parties which are disturbing elements on earth. Apavarga Virya. Your prowess never deteriorates. Virya is actually power, prowess. You are the proprietor of the transcendental abode, that is Apavarga Virya. And Govinda, Go Dvija Surarthi. Arthi Hara Avatara. Sanskrit is so beautiful. Govinda, you are actually the one who gives pleasure to the cows, or you relieve the distress of the cows. Go Dvija Sura Arthi Hara means Go Dvija Arthi. The cows and the brahmanas and the devatas, whatever arthi, whatever suffering they undergo, Hara means avatara. For that you have descended. So easy to understand. Yoga Ishwara Akhila Guru. You are the master of all mystics, and you are Akhila Guru. Krishnam Mande Jagat Guru. Bhagavan Namaste. Such a wonderful glorification by Kunti. So let us hear from Prabhupada and then we will discuss. So I will recite this verse again. Sri Krishna Krishna Sakha Vrishni Rishabhavani Drug Rajanya Vamshadahana Napavarga Virya Govinda Godvija Surarthi Haravatara Yogeshwara Akhila Guru Bhagavan Namaste. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, a summary of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna is made herein by Srimati Kunti Devi. The Almighty Lord has His eternal transcendental abode where He is engaged in keeping Surabhi cows. He is served by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. He descends on the material world to reclaim His devotees and to annihilate the disturbing elements. In groups of political parties and kings who are supposed to be in charge of administration work, He creates, maintains and annihilates by His unlimited energies. And still He is always full with prowess and does not deteriorate in potency. The cows, the brahmanas and the devotees of the Lord are all objects of His special attention because they are very important factors for the general welfare of living beings. So he says here that the Lord comes to annihilate the disturbing elements who are all big, big political parties and kings who are supposed to be in charge of administration work. but who create trouble for the world. Come to annihilate them. This verse is well known in India. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuttanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam dharma samsthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So in the previous verse it says dharmasya glani. The next verse it says dharma samsthapanarthaya. So that word dharmasya glani is explained by Prabhupada in various ways. One meaning of dharmasya glani is when the rulers, administrators of this world become a great threat for the living entities, like Hitler, in killing millions of Jews due to some misunderstanding that he said that the Germans are Aryans, actual Aryans, they have bluish eyes, and for them to expand their actual Brahmana population or like the intelligent class population, the other population like the Jews should be annihilated. That was his own concoction. And foolishly, he took the swastik symbol, which is considered auspiciousness, for his plan. So he is proclaiming to be doing an auspicious act, but doing the most inauspicious act. See? And he killed practically, 10 million people. So many millions of Jews were killed. So when kings become atrocious like this and they pose a great threat to this world by acting foolishly, like he did, or even Stalin, or there had been people like Hiranyakashipu who want to usurp the property of God for their own self-aggrandizement, like Hiranyakashipu was so submissive and humble when Brahma appeared, when he did namaskar and everything, when he got up, then he removed his agenda. Wait a minute, one by one. He said, the first thing is, I want to become Swami of the whole world. So he wanted to become Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Yeah. And then he also said, everybody should chant Om Hiranyakashipu Namaha. My name everybody should chant. Not Lord Vishnu's name. So he considered himself a competitor to Vishnu. Or rather, he considered Vishnu to be his competitor. Isn't it? So he was competing with Vishnu. Prakritisthani Karshati Visena. Manashashtani Indriyani Prakritisthani Karshati. Every living entity in this world is warring against the Supreme Lord. Actually, in Indra's prayers, Indra says, my dear Lord, everybody is warring against you to occupy your post and position and become the most beautiful, most strong, most knowledgeable and most renounced, and they want to become most of everything. Prabhupada was telling one devotee who wrote a letter to him. He wrote, Prabhupada, I have a very big problem in my life. And he wrote a long 2-3 page letter. At the end he wrote, you are most insignificant servant. So and so. And then Prabhupada was telling his secretary, he is claiming he is most insignificant servant, but he has the biggest problem. How is it possible? Prabhupada asked, if you are most insignificant, the problem also should be most insignificant. But if it is not, that means you are Namke Vaste writing, most insignificant. But you are thinking, I am very big. That's why your problem is also big, he said. So, Prabhupada said, you are most insignificant living entity. You only realize it, you won't have any problem. And Krishna is the biggest, and the mightiest, and the supreme. You simply stay under the shelter of his lotus feet, you have no problem. If you only consider yourself tiny, like the Prabhupada said. But because you think you are very big, so you have a big problem. That is sir. So, the great kings like Hiranyakashipu, they try to war against Krishna. That way every living entity is warring against Krishna for that supreme position. To become, there is a great ongoing struggle in the life of every living entity in this world. to become popular, to become famous, to become mighty, to become beautiful. So this tendency continues even after one comes into spiritual life. There are so many people, swamis and yogis and babas, you know, who want to achieve some siddhis and to become popular amongst the people. And some people wanting to see a huge amount of population following them. Like the kings have a desire to increase their domains and increase their kingdom and wanting to have the influence over more and more people in the world. Yeah, Alexander had the desire. He wanted to at one time practically cover up the whole globe. Now we may have a doubt, what about Yudhishthira Maharaj? He wanted to become the king of the world. He is in the Rajasuya horse, you know, to place, to ensure that all the kings surrender to his supreme flag. So is it not like Alexander? Somebody may have a question. But actually, at the time of Yudhishthira Maharaj, he saw there were subordinate kings. And Yudhishthira Maharaj wanted to accept tribute from them and tax from them. And by accepting tax, then he also becomes obliged to guide them how the world should be run. Under the supreme flag of Krishna's supremacy. So he was already ruling the world, you know, very appropriately with Krishna's teachings as given in the Shastras. And wherever he found people are deviating, so he wanted to bring them also under that supreme flag. And he wanted to establish Krishna consciousness all over the world. Why should a part of the world be Krishna conscious and other part not be Krishna conscious? So when Prabhupada is saying, let us expand from New York to Los Angeles, Los Angeles to San Francisco, let's send devotees to London. At one time Prabhupada said, in every continent, in every city, we should have a temple. There should be no place where there are no devotees. That is the desire of a pure devotee, to want to establish Krishna's rule everywhere. So that everywhere people will prithivati acheyadi nagaradigram sarvatra prachar. So Prabhupada said, when a devotee is trying to expand Krishna's rule everywhere, that brings supreme auspiciousness to the world. Whereas when a non-devotee like Alexander, when such kind of people are Hitler or Stalin, when they try to expand their kingdom, they cause great injury to the living entities, torturing them physically, depriving them of all their needs and necessities of life by usurping their wealth in the form of tax and looting the public for their own enjoyment. They are called as a dasyu in the 12th canto of Bhagavatam. The kings become like plunderers. They loot the public and fill up their pockets. Like in India, we find 5 years a politician is allowed to be on a post. During these 5 years, when he is in post, he fills up as many pockets as possible. This pocket, this pocket, this pocket. And the pockets are swelling, you know, as much he can carry. And then when the 5 year period is over, then he's supposed to get down. So what he does? He uses that money for canvassing. Everywhere he puts his face. You know, wherever you go nowadays, you find political faces. Mataji, Prabhuji's, everybody. Everywhere. And their names and, you know, vote for hand, vote for this, vote for, you know, different things like that. And then they do such canvassing. And then again they get the post because of too much canvassing. Like when you hear Pepsi, 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 then you go to your shop and say, give me Pepsi. Like that they advertise. And once they come to post, again they usurp the public. You see, looting the public. So, the Shastras actually teach even material leaders, even they are supposed to be responsible for the people to whom they are accepting their post by promising them that they will favor them. Even if somebody is not God conscious, he should at least be wise to know what are his duties and try to do. There are some social welfare workers. India had many like that. Like you say, this Mahatma Phule or Dubey or Vinoba Bhave or Gandhi. There have been many people in India. They might not have been, you know, very Krishna conscious, or they didn't come in parampara. At least they try to do something good for the welfare of the society. They are considered to be better than the selfish masses, or the selfish leaders who accept a post for usurping the public. But those who become such social leaders, eventually they have to come in contact with sadhus and brahmanas and learn from them what is real welfare work that they can do for the public. Not just feeding the goat and starving the man. They have to learn eventually. So, if the king was an ignoramus, he didn't know, at least he should be advised to take the advice of the brahmanas. He cannot remain an ignoramus. Similarly, any leader, like here he says, the disturbing elements in groups of political, why they become disturbing elements? If they don't know the sublime transcendental truth, the next thing is that they will be conducted with the three modes, by default. That is arranged in the material world. Either you are conducted by Krishna or you are conducted by Maya through the agency of three modes. They are already waiting. Prabhupada says, as soon as you become out of engagement, then Maya is there ready-made. Ready Maya is waiting. Immediately she engages the jiva. Immediately. And you don't have to pay any remuneration to Maya. Immediately she will engage you. Instantly. By default. So, imagine you give a post to a king like Alexander and all these kings. They have post, they have position, they have power, they have money, they have wealth, they have respect from the people, everything. And if they have no brain, then what is the result? The result is they are conducted by three modes. And they do all kinds of foolish things. Like you see King Vena. This King Vena, he was such a ignoramus. When he became the king, he misapplied the shastras. He saw that the brahmanas were doing yajna for the devatas. He immediately made an announcement. Why these brahmanas are so foolish that instead of worshipping the king, who is none other than the supreme personality of Godhead, how they can perform worship for these devatas? The king is called Naradeva, which means the supreme personality of Godhead, he said. Actually, king is a representative of supreme personality of Godhead. He is not himself Supreme Lord. He is a representative of the Supreme Lord. And is respected like the Supreme Lord. But he is not the Supreme Lord. Like Prabhupada will say that here, as we proceed ahead. Here Prabhupada will say, Kunti Devi also addresses Lord Krishna as the destroyer of the political parties or royal dynasties that disturb the earth. In every monarchy, the king is honored very gorgeously. Why? Since he is a human being and the other citizens are also human beings, why is the king so honored? Good question, no? He is a human being, they are human beings. Why is he so much honored? The answer is that the king, like the spiritual master, is meant to be the representative of God. In Vedic literature it is said, Acharyam, Mam, Vijani, Yan, Na Abhamanyeta Karhichit. Namartya Buddhya Asuyeta Sarvadeva Mayoguru. So it says that one Prabhupada used to quote this verse often. Krishna says, Acharya Mam Vijaniya. The Acharya should be treated as good as myself. Na Avamanyeta Karhichit. Never do apaman. Never disrespect him. Namartya Buddhya Asuyeta. Never think of him to be an ordinary mortal. Asuyeta. Never be envious of him. He says, Sarvadeva Mayoguru. Actually, all the devatas are offering you different material benedictions, but by surrendering to the Acharya, one can achieve that spiritual benediction, which makes all these material benedictions a subset. Everything that you can get from different devatas can be achieved in one stroke by surrendering to the Acharya. The spiritual master should not be regarded as an ordinary human being. Similarly, a king or president is also not treated like an ordinary human being. In the Sanskrit language, the king is also called Naradeva, which means God in human form. That is Naradeva. Nara means human, Deva means God. So God in a human form, like that one should treat. His duty is like that of Krishna as God, which means to the degree he acts exactly like Krishna. Like for example, he becomes the embodiment of Krishna. He acts like Krishna. And whatever Krishna would do for the living entities, he does that. To that degree, he is Naradeva. You understand? No? Yeah. as God is the supreme living being in the universe and is the maintainer of all other living beings, the king is the supreme citizen in the state and is responsible for the welfare of all others. Just as we are all living beings, Krishna, God, is also a living being. Krishna is not impersonal. And then Prabhupada talks about how Krishna is the source of everything. Krishna is unlimited and all that, he says. Then he says, the king or the president is a person and the citizens are also persons. But the difference is that the president or king is an exalted person who should be offered all respect. Now, why should so many persons worship one person? Because that one person provides for the others. Yeko bahunam yo vidhadati kaman. God is one and we are many, but he is worshipped because he provides for everyone. It is God who provides food and all other necessities of life. We need water, and God has nicely arranged for oceans of water with salt mixed in it to preserve it all nicely. Then, because we need drinking water, by God's arrangement, the sunshine evaporates the water from the ocean, takes it high in the sky, and then distributes clear, distilled water. Just see how God is providing everything that everyone needs. Even in ordinary life, the state has a heating department, lighting department, plumbing department, and so on. Why? Because these are amenities we require. But these arrangements are subordinate. The first arrangement is that of God. It is God who originally supplies heat, light, and water. It is God who supplies the rainwater that fills our wells and reservoirs. Therefore, the original supplier is God. God is an intelligent person who knows that we need heat, light, water, and so on. Without water, we cannot produce food. Even those who eat animals cannot do so without God's arrangement. For the animal also must be provided with grass before one can take it to the slaughterhouse. Thus it is God who is supplying food. But still we are creating rebellion against him. The word druk means rebellious. Those rascals who are going against the law of God are rebellious. The king's duty is to act as the representative of Krishna or God. Otherwise, what right does he have to take so much honor from the citizens? He's asking. What right he has to take so much honor from the citizens? Monarchy was formerly present in every country, but because the kings rebelled against God and violated his laws, because they tried to usurp the power of God and did not act as his representatives, the monarchies of the world have nearly all disappeared. The kings thought that their kingdoms were their personal property. I have so much property that such a big kingdom. They thought, I am God, I am the Lord of all I survey. But that is not actually the fact. The fact is that everything belongs to God. Ishtavasyamidam sarva. Therefore, the representative of God must be very obedient to God. And then his position will be legitimate. Greedy, self-interested kings are like false spiritual masters, bogus spiritual masters, who proclaim that they themselves are God. Because such false masters are rebellious, they have no position. A spiritual master is supposed to act not as God, but as the most confidential servant of God by spreading God consciousness, Krishna consciousness. Sakshadhar, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Sakshadharetvena samasta shastray uktastata bhavyata eva sarvihi kintu prabhorya priya eva tasya vande guru shri charanaravindam. All the shastras, the Vedic literature state that the spiritual master is to be honored as the supreme personality of Godhead. That's the idea that the spiritual master is as good as God is not bogus. It is stated in the shastras. And therefore, those who are advanced in spiritual life accept this spiritual injunction. Uktas tatha bhavyata eva sadbihi. Then, is the spiritual master as good as God? Kintu praborya priya eva tasya. The spiritual master is not God, but is the confidential representative of God. The distinction is that between Savior Bhagavan, he who is worshipped, and Sevaka Bhagavan, he who is the worshipper. The spiritual master is God and Krishna is God, but Krishna is worshipable God, whereas the spiritual master is worshipper God. The Mayavadis cannot understand this. They think because the spiritual master has to be accepted as God, and because I have become a spiritual master, I have become God. They think like that. This is rebellious. Those who are given a position by God, but who want to usurp his power, which they actually cannot do, are rebellious fools and rascals who require punishment. Dandetarayama, he says, you know, Sanyasi Chitkana Jeev, Kiranakana Sama, Shadeshwarya Purna Krishna, Hoya Surya Pama, he says. And then in the next verse he says, Krishna is Maya Adish, and the Jivatma is Maya Abash, and whichever Jiva claims that he is also Maya Adish, he is Dandetara Yama, he says. He deserves to be beaten by the Danda of Yamaraj. Very nice verse, beautiful. Therefore, Kunti Devi says, Avanidrug Rajanya Vamsha Dahana, you descend to kill all these rascals who rebelliously claim your position. When various kings or landholders are subordinate to an emperor, they sometimes rebel and refuse to pay taxes. Correct, no? Similarly, there are rebellious persons who deny the supremacy of God and declare themselves God, and Krishna's business is to kill them. This is the first part. So, here Prabhupada explains about how, what we read now, the summary of that is this, that why is Krishna to be worshipped by all living entities? Because he is the provider. As he says, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanya Chaitanyanam Yeko Bahunam Yo Vidhadati Kaman. One singular supreme maintains plural subordinates. Everybody. Our breathing, our drinking water, our eating food, our very sustenance of this living body, material body. So all these things are made possible by Krishna, so we worship him. Now because the living entities in general cannot see Krishna face to face and offer him worship, Krishna has sent many representatives. For example, mother and father are one representative. And the spiritual master is another representative. The king, the Naradev, is another representative. So Prabhupada says in one place, even the king of the country, like prime minister or president, or the chief ministers or MLA MPs, whenever Prabhupada would meet them, he would give them respect also. And devotees used to ask Prabhupada, Prabhupada, these are materialistic fellows, they are demons. Why they should be respected? And Prabhupada would say, no, right now Krishna has invested the power of being the chief minister of a state in them. So they are representing God. So to the degree they act on Krishna's behalf, there are good people also. Not every politician is bad. So there are good politicians who try to act as God's representative. They try to do good. So to that degree, they are assuming the representation of God, and they deserve to be respected like that, because they are holding that position. And then Prabhupada very beautifully explains about how God is the provider of everything, the rains, water, heat, light and everything. Then he talks about the king who represents Krishna. And a king like Yudhishthira Maharaj, for example, you can read in Srimad Bhagavatam, and Yudhishthira Maharaj, of course, we can talk so much about him, but we can talk about Swayambhava Manu, who was treated by his citizens just like a father. And he treated them like children. When you will read that verse, it says, when he got his daughter married to Kardama and he returned back, when he entered the kingdom, the citizens lovingly welcomed him like the children welcoming a father, it is said. So the people felt the same shelter in the king as they felt shelter in Krishna's lotus feet. That's the point. He could represent Krishna so perfectly. Now, what are all the things that the king is supposed to represent? One of the things is the king is supposed to supply the needs, as he says here. people should have water, people should have grains, people should have accommodation to live comfortably, people should have proper roads, people should have comforts and facilities for a peaceful living. And that is one thing which is called as a provider. Then the king also is supposed to be a protector. Like for example, the king should curb the evil elements like the thieves and rogues and the looters who may cause damage to the property of people. They may usurp the property like gold and silver, or they may pollute the women, they may rob the cows and calves, they may do that, or they may kill the people and murder them, they may increase the criminalism. So the king has to curb such elements. That is one of the duties of a king. Like Krishna also says, Vinashaya cha dushkritam, isn't it? He says to curb the evil elements. And Paritranaya sadhana, similarly the king has to protect all the people in the country. So he has to provide, he has to protect also. At the same time, the king also has to offer them the supreme protection. What is it? Giving them Krishna consciousness. He has to give upadesh, sadupadesh to the people, either himself or through the agency of the brahmanas. He has to make a provision for people to become enlightened. Otherwise, the masses of public will fight amongst one another due to greed for wealth, for another man's wife. Or for all these things, they are going to be injuring one another. To make the citizens live a peaceful life in this world and attain the paramgatim. So there is ihalok and there is paralok. So people, in order to live life peacefully in ihalok, and for people to attain the paralok padavi, the king has to give wisdom, either himself or through the agency of the brahmanas. And he has to make cultural activities. He has to make religious activities. He has to make community welfare projects. He has to ensure that the women, the old people, the brahmanas, the cows, the calves, the children, they all are properly protected according to law. They are not exploited by anyone in the society. And the religious and cultural and spiritual activities that are conducted and administered to the public through the agency of huge temples and the brahmanas who are learned in the wisdom of the shastra, through them the king should administer and make the delight public in the lotus feet of Krishna. The public should delight in the sound vibration of the shastra by adapting it in their life as in every breath they have to follow the shastra. Like once the varnashram dharma is administered to the public, then you will see, you go to any home, the children will respect the parents. You know, the parents will lovingly take care of the children. Prabhupada says the children should be grateful, the wife should be chaste, and husband should be protective. All this happens when varnashrama is administered, very naturally. Actually, because king is doing yatha raja, tatha praja. So king has to set a high class example. Based on that, in every home, there is a representative of the king. Who is it? The mother and father. And they will take care of the children. There will be no loose dealings between men and women. There will be nobody usurping another man's property. The cows will not be tortured. The children will not be exploited. You see, the woman will not be exploited. Neither will the woman pollute any other man, nor will any man pollute a woman. In this way, there is law and order brought about by the king's guidance, by the king's chivalrous nature and his strong rule. And the king is not independent of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is actually guided by the Supreme Lord through the agency of brahmanas. So there is a body of brahmanas. Brahmanas are also of different types. There are brahmanas like Dronacharya, who can give martial arts training. There are brahmanas like Chanakya, who doesn't fight himself, but who gives political advice. He has the shrewdness and the diplomacy to practically shake a whole country. There are brahmanas like that. Then there are brahmanas who study Ayurveda. There are brahmanas who can give justice. There are brahmanas who can give, karmakanda education from the Vedas. And then train people in puja part so that, like I heard in this Alandi, they have a Gurukul, where they have they have like 100, 200 young children. They recruit and they train them. They grow up. They come to the stage of youth. I heard that they have 7 years training. They only take between 7 years to 10 years. Within that you have to admit your child. If anybody wants to admit them in that Gurukul. Within that period. And then the next 7 years they train. In puja part and karma kanda and everything. And after that 7 years they leave them now. So what they do there, if some child is showing interest for memorizing verses, they teach them puja part, karma kanda and everything. And if some child is showing some inclination for studying Bhagavat, then they teach Bhagavat also, according to their interest. So I met one pujari in one Ram Mandir. I had a nice talk with him. I asked, how are you trained there? I asked him, he was telling me. So they also teach Bhagavat, those only for those who want to learn. Then what you all do, I said. Then he said, after 7 years, we are released. We can go out and we can do whatever we want. Now I wanted to connect with them and find out whether any of them would like to come to Pune temple and see our activities. If they want to, after promotion from there, they can come and join us. Isn't it? Because those who are, especially those who are trained in Bhagavatam, they become pujaris in different temples. Instead, we can take them to Pune temple. So their output will be our input. And then we can train them as brahmacharis. If they want to become grihastha, then they can become pujaris in temples. Isn't it? So we would like to have a talk. So this fellow is in one Ram Mandir, he is doing as a... So now I am doing little research on the pujaris in different temples now. In Pune. So we want to start a pujari voice. So, we, you know. Yeah, this is a big project which has not yet come up. We have just given the vision to devotees. Pujari voice means get all the pujaris of Vitthal Mandir, Ram Mandir, Krishna Mandir, Vishnu Mandir, all these temples first. And then get these pujaris and train them wonderfully in how to dress the deities. The poor fellows, these fellows dress the deity once in a year only. Now how to dress every day, how to offer the worship, and how to study Bhagavad Gita, and how to preach Bhagavad Gita, chant 16 rounds. And if we do that, we are planning to train 50 pujaris like that. Then send them out to that temple. We don't want to keep them with us. But whichever temple they are serving, they can go back and serve. But as a Krishna conscious devotee, they will serve. And then whoever comes to temple, they will give them prasad and everything. Otherwise, what happens nowadays in many pujaris in temples? You know, one jamindar complained to me. Our pujari we have kept, he is hearing cinema songs inside the altar. He is saying. Because they have lower taste. Because they don't have higher taste. You see. And the morning I have to literally beat him up and get him up. He doesn't get up, he was telling. These are practical problems. So we want to train them to become first class brahmanas and vaishnavas. Then go back and worship. These are all actually duties of a king also. A king of a country should worry that the Lord should be worshipped nicely in all temples. With the temple pujari should be trained and trained in a place and then sent out so they worship properly. So the king is guided by a board of brahmanas, different type of brahmanas I told you. So one of the type of brahmanas is, you know, learned in the Vedic literature, in the Vedas and Upanishads, and so you may be a jnani type brahmana. Then there are bhakta type brahmanas who are called Vaishnavas, who are considered. There are two things Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Anudita Vivek and Udita Vivek. In the Anudita Viveka, the topmost class is Brahmanas, he says. Now you may wonder, how Brahmanas are called Anudita Vivek? Anudita Vivek means the Udita Vivek are only Vaishnavas. Those who have become awakened to the personality of Godhead. Vishnu or Krishna or Ram or Vittal, that kind of. Those who have developed their bhakti, they may be born of Shudra class, Chandala class, any class. They are called Udita Vivek. But Anudita Vivek means those who have slumbering consciousness, those who are covered up consciousness. But amongst them, the best class is who? The Brahmanas. Why? The Brahmanas have come to the topmost realization that there is absolute truth and it is either impersonal or it is manifesting as different devatas. Like that they think. So from that point, one can come to Vaishnava platform subsequently. So in this way, one can become a Udita Vivek. Those are Udita Vivek Brahmanas called Vaishnavas. And they can give the supreme advice to the kings on how the people can be transported back home, back to Godhead. You see? Yeah. So they can engage all the people of the country in Bhakti Yoga, like Ambarish Maharaj did with all his people. It is said, not a single citizen in Ambarish Maharaj's kingdom aimed at heavenly planets. Everybody aimed at the spiritual world only. They were so pure-hearted. It's not only the king, The Praja also were like that. They were so pure-hearted. So, naturally people are so pure-hearted, you can imagine, can they cause any injury to anyone? You know, they benefit themselves, they benefit everybody. Anything that comes from them is only sublime. Like you see Krishna, you know, Putana came in touch with him and Krishna gave her the position of Dhatri in the spiritual world, you see. Anyone who comes in touch with Krishna, bad or good, any type of person, they will get, you know, a sublime position. That's because the Krishna cannot do any harm to anyone. That is why I was reading just 2 days ago, in Akrura entering Vrindavan. The first verse says, so in this way, Lord Krishna killed Arishtasur and he performed Adbhuta Karmanaha, it said. I was wondering, what kind of Adbhuta Karma is this? You killed somebody, is it Adbhuta Karma? It's a horrible karma. Isn't it? Why is it Adbhuta Karmana? The reason is Krishna's activities are called Adbhuta Karmana. Why? Even when he kills somebody, they get the highest destination. It's like, imagine if I am taking a spear and throwing on somebody, imagine it becomes a garland and falls on his neck. Is it not wonderful? That's what happens with Krishna. He cannot harm anybody. Even apparently, externally, it appears like he is harming someone, but he is benefiting them. Like I told you in one previous class, Hatha Ari Gati Dayaka. You remember? Hatha means when he kills his enemies, he gives them gati. So, imagine if a murderer is coming to a millionaire's house. He comes there and he catches him. He takes a knife and he's lifting it up. He's going to murder him. That fellow is screaming. And the fellow thief takes out some 10 crore rupees and gives him, please take it. Will it ever happen? He goes to somebody to murder somebody and he gives them 10 crore rupees. It's impossible. That's what Krishna does. Krishna appears to be taking a Sarshan Chakra. Like that he sends it. Thak, it cuts the neck of Shishupal. And Krishna gives him Sayuja Mukti. You see? It's very amazing. He appears like killing somebody, but he's benefiting them the most. Same with Krishna's devotees also. You know, Narada is spelling a curse on Nalakur Manigri. And those fellows land up in the courtyard of Nanda Baba. Becoming trees, and they are watching pastimes of Krishna. Instead of going to hell, one of the Maharaura of hell, and being roasted or in the fire, or being put in oil like a puri. Huh? Instead of that, they are landing where? In the Nanda Bhavan behind, and they are witnessing pastimes of Krishna after having committed so much sins. You see, so even for a sinner, the Lord, or his devotees, when they give apparent punishment. That is not a punishment. That is like a blessing in disguise, it is said. Blessing in disguise. Disguise means covered blessing. It appears, the label is written, punishment. You open the label, inside you find blessing. It's like that. Imagine somebody has kept a bag here, it's written there, Karela's inside, don't touch. And you open the bag, inside you find a big dabba full of gulab jamuns. And you know why he has written like that. Otherwise, if you write gulab jamun outside, you'll get over. Isn't it? So, in this way, Krishna's curse or devotee's curse appears like a curse. But inside it is blessing. It's a blessing in disguise, you see. That's why it's called Hatari. That is why his activities are Adbhuta Karmanaha, you see. I was hearing, as well as Radha Govind Maharaj was telling, Bhagavan किसी को मारते नहीं हाथ में छड़ी लेके जाते हैं गोचर लीला के लिए भगवान लेकिन गाय को मारते नहीं सिर्फ छड़ी पकड़ने के लिए पकड़ते हैं बस सिर्फ उनकी लीला है बस छड़ी को दिखाते हैं मारते नहीं यस सेलिंग कृष्णा इज सो हाउ विल ही बीट हिज डिवोटीज ही वोंट बीट दे आर ऑल सरेंडर्ड सोल्स टू कृष्णा सो इन दिस वे कृष्णा कैन नॉट कॉज एनी हार्म सिमिलर द किंग ऑल्सो He is the supreme, he is like the father of all the praja. So his so-called anger and his so-called desire to punish the living entities is another expression of his love. Like Yudhishthira Maharaj, when he had gone out and Pandavas had gone out, Draupadi was alone, she was watering the plants in the garden in the middle of the jungle, in the woods. At that time one king was passing by, it was Jayadratha with his son also. And with 1,000 men army, with horses and elephants, he was passing by. And he was looking here and there, the forest beauty, and suddenly he saw the darkish beauty of Draupadi. And he saw, hey, who is this young beautiful girl? You know, her eyes are like a bumblebee moving, and she looks like some apsara descended from heaven. He told his son, go and find out who she is. And the son went and found out and came back and told the father. So Jayadratha at that time was going to marry another queen somewhere else, another state. So he was going with his army. But when he saw this beauty, he decided to cancel that engagement and marry this lady. So he himself personally went and he started loosely talking to her. And then Draupadi told her identity, who I am. I am already married. I am not an unmarried girl. I am a married woman. I have 5 husbands and everything. But still this fellow lost control due to lust. He just caught hold of her hand and dragged her, come with me, you have to marry me at any cost. And then he pulled her up into his chariot. And Draupadi, of course Draupadi tried her best to defend herself. There was Dhaumya Rishi also there. And he is a poor Brahmana, he cannot lift any weapon. So as this king Jayadratha was taking Draupadi and proceeding along with his army, Dhaumya Rishi was, coming behind, running along with the chariot, giving him curses in Sanskrit language. As a Brahmana, just like our boys give some vulgar words in English, so he was giving, you rascal, you rogue, all kinds of things. So he was running along with the chariot because he couldn't defend her. At least he was trying to go and trying to curse the king and bring him to his good senses by his preaching. That was the thing he was doing. So as he was proceeding, Draupadi was telling, you rascal Jayadrath, wait and watch. My 5 husbands will very soon come on the way. When they come, you will understand who they are. They will not leave you to go with your breath, with your life, you are telling. At that time, sure enough, Yudhishthira Maharaj and Bhima and Arjuna, Nakula Sahadev, they all appeared on the opposite side. This fellow tried to escape. And then she showed, now you see, the tall personality who appears like a big salt tree, who is yellowish, golden in complexion, he is Yudhishthira Maharaj. He is the supreme emperor. And all his brothers are totally subservient and obedient to him. And he has no rival in this world. And no one can conquer him, she said. And then you see that other personality, that very tall and hefty personality who, he is Bhima. She said, his anger knows no bounds. And especially when he becomes angry, his raw strength smashes people to dust, into pulp. And he has no habit of controlling himself when he becomes angry. Now, he will not leave you to escape with your life. And then she said, look at that personality, Dhananjaya, who is Arjuna. And he is a great hero. Like that she described about everybody. And this fellow was watching. At that time, Yudhishthira Maharaj told, immediately he said, run! He told Arjuna and Bhima, go and capture this Jayadratha who is running away with our wife. And Bhima said, yes, I will do the needful, don't worry. He told all of us. And Yudhishthira specifically told him, you capture him but don't kill him, he said. So Vyasadeva ran behind this fellow and at least suppose they entered into his chariot. And Draupadi was saved, sent back. And then Arjuna was also catching. One side Arjuna was catching, another side Bhima was catching. And then Bhima lifted his like this. Ah! Like that he was coming down, to hit him like this. That time Arjuna reminded, hey, wait a minute. Our Yudhishthira told you not to kill him. Oh, sorry, I forgot, he said. As you would have finished him, in one shot you would have finished him like that, And then this Jayadratha was caught by the neck, like this they catch, like this. You've seen people put from behind like this. He was caught and taken like an animal, in front of Yudhishthira Maharaj, and thrown in front of Yudhishthira. At that time Draupadi was sitting by his side, Yudhishthira was sitting, and peacefully sitting, he was giving a Bhagavatam class to him. He preached to him, see my dear Jayadratha, the duty of a king is this, one should never try to exploit woman with one's kshatriya strength. Kshatriya strength, vidyam vivadaya dhanam madaya shakti paresham paripidanaya. Brahmana can misuse his knowledge by making vad vivad foolishly. Similarly, kshatriya can misuse his power by doing balatkar to a woman who doesn't want to accept him, but he is doing balatkar. He said, this is improper. He preached to him at length. And then he told him, so we forgive you and we leave you, provided you promise that you will not indulge like this again in future. And Jayadrath agreed and offered obeisances. Then Yudhishthira sent him off. Very amazing. Yudhishthira's forgiveness knows no limits. Very amazing. So, it's a duty of the, of course, I was telling you the king generally takes advice from the brahmanas. And Yudhishthira was a very learned person also. That's why all his brothers deeply respected him. And here he was a very balanced king, very great king. So, in this way, the king, like you see Yudhishthira Maharaj, you know, such a, the reason I told you this example is, the king sometimes may act very powerfully. Like you see, Parikshit Maharaj is removing his sword. I will cut off your head, you rascal Kali. You are beating the cow and bull, he said. But then when Kali fell at his feet, he put his sword back inside. He couldn't kill. So, it is the duty of the king to be chivalrous and purify the public and send them back to Godhead. That's his duty. But his punishment is also another form of love. Yeah. Like Krishna, for example, is killing the demons and protecting the demigods. But his killing the demons is also another form of love of Krishna only. He's showing his love to those living entities by controlling them. You remember in one of the classes I told before how some students are very well behaved in the class to the teacher. They make notes, they raise hands and answer the teacher, and they are very enthusiastic in the class. After the class is over, they consult the teacher. Teacher gives a homework. You know, they do it in the school only. Sometimes children, you know, I remember in our school days, some students will go to the teacher's staff room and say, ma'am, the homework is over. And ma'am will say, I gave you homework or school work? You finished so quickly, okay, come. And then she'll correct. Oh, this is correct, this is correct. Yeah, this is also right. Oh, everything is right. Very good. She'll give a pat on the back and she will give a chocolate or something. Child will come out happily saying that, you know, see, all my answers are right. Teacher was happy. And then the other fellows would take his notebook and copy very quickly. You know? So they don't have to do homework when they go home. You know? But there are other children in the class sitting in their back benches, as we call, sit behind and drawing caricatures of the teacher. You know, draw, and, you know, teacher has a big specs, like a soda specs or something. And they will draw the teacher like looking like a monkey or something. Sometimes, you know, when they are doing drawing like this, teacher will go from behind and watch what are they doing. From the top she will watch. And then after watching she will catch. They say, you rascal, you are drawing my picture sitting in the class. Are you listening to mathematics or are you drawing? And then she'll give a slap like this. Sometimes. Or one of my teachers, you know, she would catch them by both ears and lift them up like this. You know. So, and then these guys, after the school is over, while coming back, they will say, see this teacher, unless you put soap for her, like those front bench guys, you know, this teacher, she gives you a slap, she lifts you up, you know, she doesn't like us, she only likes those fellows. But actually, these back benches, these fellows are compared to demons, and the front benches are compared to demigods. Lord doesn't, it's not that Lord favors demigods. And hates demons. Lord doesn't hate anyone. His slapping the demons is also a sign of his love. Because he wants to reform them and bring them back to track. Bring them to the right path, you see. So, in this way, the king also should curb the evil elements who are going out of control. You see, every living entity is provided with some amenities and facilities and commodities by the Supreme Lord. Lead a peaceful life. And one should take that quota and be peaceful. But the nature of the living entities in this world is they become extremely greedy. For usurping others' property, another man's wife, another man's land, another man's money. Like you see, one place we went for this, some camp, Brahmachari camp or something. So we went for the camp. A dude was telling, what a scenic place, beautiful lake is there, beautiful gardens are there. We're room, so we kept, some of them kept their mobiles for charging near the window. And then of course they locked the house and they went to another place in the garden or somewhere for a program. When we came back, 2-3 mobiles were stolen. Somebody put their hand inside the window and stole it. That is the nature of the conditions all in the world, usurping others' property. So that is why the kings acted on behalf of Krishna. And they were, so Yudhishthira Maharaj now wants to bring his rule all over the world. What was his reason? What was his purpose? So that everybody will align with Krishna. They are paying tributary. Many of the kings didn't even raise any objection. When Yudhishthira Maharaj went, they salute. Immediately they said, we'll pay a tributary to you, no problem. You guide us how we should act in the interest of Krishna and to please Krishna. They submitted, they were very happy. But other kings like Alexander or Hitler, these are vicious kings. Prabhupada says there are good Mahajans and there are dangerous Mahajans or vicious Mahajans. Prabhupada says, kings like Yudhishthira Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj, Arjuna, and many great personalities mentioned in Bhagavatam and other places, they are like ideal Mahajans. They are all, and kings, similarly, the Acharyas down the line, they are also Mahajans. And there are, Dvadasha Mahajans also. But Prabhupada says, the modern day Mahajans who misguide the public are like Darwin, he is another Mahajan. Prabhupada says, Hitler, he is another rascal Mahajan. Prabhupada says the envious and foolish people also have their own Mahajans also. Like in South India, when I was studying in a school, one of my friends used to worship Bruce Lee with Agarbati every day. And I had a picture of Bruce Lee like this, like this would be there. And he would worship. At worshipping, he will wear his belt, black belt. Like that he will be doing. So people, everybody has their own hero, Mahajan, isn't it? They worship. So the kings were trying to act on behalf of Krishna, representative. So here the point that is mentioned here is, the king should be respected as good as God. If one wants to benefit from one's Krishna consciousness, one should respect the spiritual master as good as Krishna. Why? He is not Krishna, but he is very dear to Krishna. So we respect him as good as Krishna. Like you see, somebody, say a president of India, his son is studying in your college. Imagine. He is in the same class. Will you meddle with him? Or pick up quarrel with him? It's very dangerous, no? Pick up quarrel with him if he goes and tells his father, his father can extend your education for 5 more years in the college. Is it not true? You'll be a little cautious. Similarly, we certainly pay respect to him. Similarly, the guru is very dear to Krishna. He's very close to Krishna. You cannot say that, I will not obey this guru, but I'll please Krishna secretly. That's not possible, because guru is very strongly connected to Krishna. You see? He's such a strong connection. Whatever you do to him, Krishna comes to know. So you cannot escape from guru and cheat guru and be mischievous to guru and then hope to please Krishna separately, privately. Krishna will say, can attack her? You're doing a big drama to me. And now, one place Ravindra Sarup Prabhu writes, in one of the articles, Prabhupada was a liberated acharya, pure soul, and everybody had such trust in him, faith in him. Now next to Prabhupada, who is the person who will substitute Prabhupada for us? And he says there is no substitute for Prabhupada. Because he was such a personality, that he was all-rounder, all-encompassing. Spiritually, managerially, administratively, in all respects, Prabhupada could give guidance to anybody. He was like a walking, talking encyclopedia. Anything you ask him, he could give an answer. He was managerially also competent, and he was spiritually also very deep and advanced. Nobody could match him. And the kind of magnetic attraction that he had towards everybody who came across him in their lives. And he could defeat the professors, defeat the atheistic scientists. And he walked amidst us only for 12 years. Like the Prabhupada's disciples say, that we only watched him for just 12 years. After that, we became bereft of his company. Now who can substitute him? So and then he says, it is very difficult to get somebody in the place of Prabhupada. So Prabhupada has made a governing body commissioners, GBC, so that they represent him. And if all of them individually cannot represent Prabhupada in totality, together they put their intelligence together. And together, cooperatively, they run this movement. And they represent Prabhupada and his mission and his vision for this whole society. And in that article, he writes, Ravindra Sarup Prabhu writes, that he quotes on Prabhupada's purport. He says, those who strictly adhere to Prabhupada and become liberated even while living in this world, they are the ones who can absolutely follow, just like we would follow Prabhupada. So two things here. One is we have to learn to become perfect representatives of Prabhupada. He is the Acharya, founder Acharya of our society. So we should represent him in such a way that we should become like glass through whom people can see Prabhupada and the previous Acharyas and ultimately Krishna. So we should, just like I am reading this purport and just elaborating on it. That's all we have to do. Study Prabhupada purports nicely. Don't give a cooked class to impress the public. You know, hijacking them away from the real message of Prabhupada. So they are called as intellectual hijackers. Who are the intellectual hijackers? Who give a very impressive class, but which has no Krishna conscious substance. They are called intellectual hijackers. Don't become one. We have to be very careful. So, we have to speak as Prabhupada has spoken, and we have to do as Prabhupada has done. That's what Prabhupada said. He gave this instruction to devotees, cram my purports. Remember the example stories that I have taught. Based on the Prabhupada is collected from various acharyas. It is not his own. Prabhupada is collected from Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, Baladev Devabhushan, Sridhara Swami, you know, Jiva Goswami. He read all of it. In some places he quotes the name, some places he doesn't quote the name, he directly gives the example. And he has done the homework for us, exactly like the Goswamis did. But the Goswamis' writings are all in Sanskrit. But Prabhupada has given in very simple English. So, one has to become a pure representative. And this is one thing. That by becoming a perfect representative, we will see the results coming. Like, you know, the motto of our movement is more devotees, happier devotees. And Srila Prabhupada made more devotees in his times. Hundreds and thousands of devotees, and our movement expanded like a wildfire, from New York to LA, then to San Francisco. Then he sent a team to London. Then he sent to Europe. You find, then he went to Russia himself, he went to Japan. In this way, Prabhupada expanded. The movement expanded everywhere. And not just expanded, in every center there were devotees joining so fast. I heard in New Vrindavan there were 600 devotees at one time. In Prabhupada's times, can you imagine? Who had moved into the temple and who were living. And you can read, there is a book called As Fortunate Souls by His Holiness Danavir Maharaj. In that book, see the last few pages. He shows the kind of census he gives, 1972 to 77, year-wise, how devotees joined. How many devotees joined? Prabhupada was like a magnet. And he was practically moving the whole world, attracting young boys and girls to dedicate their lives and join the movement. And people, it was like one way. People joined and nobody left in Prabhupada's times. They were only joining more and more. And it appeared to people that, you know, we are going to take over the whole world. Now, it's almost done. They thought that this continent, that continent, we started center here, everywhere. They thought that the job is over now. Now, they asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, if the whole world comes forward and requests you to become the king, would you like to become? Prabhupada said, no. I will post a Kshatriya king and I will become his assistant, minister. I would like to become his advisor and give him advice. Because a Brahmana doesn't want to be king. A Brahmana wants to be advisor to the king. And Prabhupada said, I will make one Krishna conscious devotee into the king of the whole world and I will become his advisor if I have that opportunity. And Prabhupada met Indira Gandhi and gave her a portfolio where he said, these are his requests. He said, all the MPs, MLAs, and the chief ministers, prime minister, president of our country, they have to be second initiated brahmanas, Prabhupada said. Every morning they should have tilak, kantimala, they should do mangalarti, then they should start their day's work. And they should follow the four relative principles strictly. And he told her, if it happens, he said, I can assure you, you know, India will become the capital of the whole world. It will become most popular and most famous. Of course, I don't know how much Indira Gandhi read that letter and took it seriously. But Prabhupada had a great plan. Prabhupada was not a big talker. He was a doer. You don't think that when we say this, many people would laugh that, you know, how can MLA MPs become Vaishnavas? But Prabhupada did not just speak it. He believed it. He thought that such things are possible. Even in the time to come also. We will find eventually some of these candidates will do IAS. They'll become collectors. They'll become MLAs, MPs. Already, when I went to South India, some MLAs, Pune itself, there is one MLA who is a 1600 devotee, one Shukracharya Prabhu in our Uttamnagar. His brother Vanjali was a MLA. So now he has come to position now also. It's not very difficult to become MLA or MP. Because people in general in India, Hindus have lot of faith in the Hinduism itself. And ISKCON has got a very, very good name in the public now. Now people are going to Tirupati, they are seeing beautiful ISKCON temple there. They are going to Mayapur, they are going to Delhi, they are going to Ahmedabad. Now they are seeing in Juhu, Bombay, Chowpatty, Bombay. Now Pune, a huge temple is coming. So ISKCON is gaining more and more respectability in the public. So tomorrow if ISKCON devotee stands as MLA in Pune, surely he will win. There is no doubt. All the Hindus will vote for him in a big way. Because when people see that, yes, these fellows are doing a lot of good. You go to the temples and see they are giving Bala Sanskar, they are giving Yuvak Sanskar, Yuva Varg, they are giving Sanskar to corporates. So they will see. And people will naturally think, because they are doing this in the temple, if you give them a vote, probably they will do the same good for the whole Pune, is it not? They will do for the whole country. So for ISKCON devotees to become popular and go to the top is not very difficult. Only Prabhupada said they have to remain pure. When they go to the top, they should not become corrupt. Otherwise even ISKCON name will be spoiled. They should not become like the other politicians. But in ISKCON devotees are trained to follow the four regs and chant Hare Krishna and become initiated, become pure. So after they take second initiation and they become full-fledged preachers, then they should become MLAs. You should make them, isn't it? So, in this way, to the degree the king or the public leader represents Krishna, to that degree he is called as Naradeva. But there are many bogus kings like the Vena, I told you. He demanded that the Brahmana stop their yajnas and they worship him. He said, you are like unchaste wives, he said. You know, who is leaving their husband, who is here, and you are going and worshipping devatas, he said. And the Brahmanas came to him, they concealed their anger, and very pleasingly they spoke to him. My dear King Vena, like that they said. They concealed their anger and spoke pleasingly. You know, try to understand the Shastra. We are worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. And you are called Naradev, you are not Vishnu, you are Vishnu's representative. So you have to do what Vishnu says. Vishnu says, these are the things we should do. And in fact, by doing this, you will attain heaven. And all your praja will also attain heaven. You will attain a sadgati. But if you don't allow us to do these yajnas, then you will glide to hell and we will all come with you to hell. So be a proper king and don't create menace. Don't be mischievous. First of all, you don't deserve to become a king, but we have made you the king. Because a blind uncle is better than no uncle. Because there is no king now, we have made you the king because you can control the rogues and thieves, we have made you. Because you are also a gunda and they are gundas, gunda can control another gunda, we have made you. Gunda king, we have made you. But don't write, of course they didn't say so badly. I told him that, you know, try to follow the proper path, they were saying. But that fellow was notorious fellow. He absolutely didn't hear, pay any heed to their good advice. He said, nothing doing, stop everything. So he was very, so then the Brahmanas thought, in their great dissatisfaction, they said, by that they said, that's all. One, they said, Vena was finished. That's all. Can you imagine? That is, this goes to show we should never earn the displeasure of great souls. When great souls see some foolish thing that you have done and say, they say, finished. All our punya is destroyed. Then we have no scope. Then a person who displeases such great souls, that such a person's heart becomes dry. He cannot make any progress in his life. So, in this way, Vena was finished. And then later on, Prithu came as a glorious king later on. Prithu Maharaj is an ideal king. He read Toshanam, Preenana, Upalalana, Anushasana, all that he did. Toshana means he fed enough food to the public, citizens, very nicely. Then he did Preenana, means offered them gifts to those who were outstanding performers, some good things they did for society. Upalalana means he called all the public and spoke sweet words of appreciation, congratulating. And Anushasana means he ruled them by giving them upadesh, that what they should do, what they should not do, what is right, what is wrong, how they should live their lives. He gave them guidance to the public how they should live. So in this way, Putta Maharaj was an ideal king, like exact father of the living entities. He was like father and mother put together, it is said. Amazing king. So he's ideal king. He is actually expansion of the Supreme Lord. He is one of the plenary expansions actually, who comes to teach the world how a king should rule the praja. Ideal king. So when kings become atrocious, then as Kunti says, the Lord comes to finish them. And then Prabhupada talks about Guru also. Your Guru claims to be God, then he has no position. That is rebellious, he says. Then Prabhupada talks about Sevaka Bhagavan and Sevya Bhagavan. Sevya means one who is worshipped by Krishna. Worshipped. He is Krishna. And Sevaka is Guru. He is called Sevaka Bhagavan. Like Radharani is called the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. And Krishna is called Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's a proper explanation. Then he explains about the Pafa Babahama. He is explaining about that. Pavarga. Why should one suffer from these five kinds of tribulation? Because one has a material body. As soon as one accepts a material body, whether it is that of a president or a common man, a demigod or a human being, an insect or Brahma, one must go through all these Pavarga tribulations. Like he says, Parishram. Like a lion in the jungle, it's not that he will get his food very easily. Nahi simhasya suttasya pravishanti mukhe mirga. It's not very easy even for a lion. He has to work hard to get his lion, get his prey every day. So all the purposes. So one should become apavarga. For becoming free from the stipulations, when Krishna shows the path, we should accept it. Krishna very clearly says, surrender unto me, I shall give you apavarga. Aham tam sarvapapibhyo mokshayishyami. And then Prabhupada talks about the cows. Krishna is called Govinda. And then he talks. Namo Brahmani Deva, he quotes. So the last paragraph I will read and I will conclude. Queen Kunti prayed to the Lord just to enunciate a fragment of his glories. The Lord, upon hearing her prayers, which were composed in choice words for his glorification, responded by smiling. And his smile was as enchanting as his mystic power. The conditioned souls who are engaged in trying to lord it over the material world are also enchanted by Lord's mystic powers, like Maya Shakti, for example. But his devotees are enchanted in a different way by the glories of the Lord. Thus all the devotees worship the Lord by chosen words. No amount of chosen words are sufficient to enumerate the Lord's glory. Yet he is satisfied by such prayers, just as a father is satisfied even by the broken linguistic attempts of a growing child. Thus the Lord smiled and accepted the prayers of Kunti. So, as it is said here, Kunti offered these wonderful prayers like a child speaking broken words, his purpose says here, in glorification of Krishna. And the answer that Krishna gave is, he just gave a smile. He accepted the prayers. This is affirmation that I have accepted your prayers. At that time, when Krishna was present on the planet, many people didn't know that he is God. Duryodhana, Dushyasana and all, they did not exactly know. But Kunti is calling Krishna as God. Namaste Purusham to Adhyam, Isham Pakrati. If Krishna is smiling, what does that mean? He is admitting, yes, whatever you said, I accept. If Krishna was not God, he would have told Kunti, Kunti, wait a minute, some corrections are there in your prayer. I appreciate some of the things you told, but I am not God, you have said. He is accepting, yes, you understood I am God, I am not your nephew, so I accept it. And also Krishna appreciated her ability to understand in such great depth with which she spoke also. In this way, every bird can fly in the sky to the ability the bird has. But the sky is very vast. Similarly, Krishna's glories are unlimited. We can only glorify him to the degree he empowers us to glorify him through the parampara. So Kunti is glorifying in her own way with the best of the understanding that she has. Like in this verse she calls Krishna as Krishna, Krishna Sakha. She uses the word in this verse. See, Kunti addresses Lord Krishna as Krishna Sakha. Because she knows that although Arjuna, who is also known as Krishna, is her son, and therefore subordinate to her, Lord Krishna is more intimately related with Arjuna than with her. Krishna is also the name of Draupadi. And so the word Krishna Sakha also indicates that Krishna's relationship with Draupadi, whom he saved from being insulted when Duryodhana and Karna attempted to strip her naked. Kunti also addresses Lord Krishna as Vrishni Rishabha, the child of dynasty of Vrishni. It was because Krishna appeared in the Vrishni dynasty. Just as and all that he says. So, in this way sometimes, when you call Krishna, connecting him to his devotee, Krishna becomes very pleased. Like when you call Krishna Yashodanandan, or Nandanandan, or you call him as, like you call him in connection to Srimati Radharani, like you say Radha Kunja Bihari. So Krishna becomes very pleased immediately. Or you call him in connection to Vrindavan Dham. Like if any of you, somebody is calling somebody in Nasik Wala, he says, hey, anybody from Nasik here, any of you? Yeah. Immediately, you know, your antenna stands up. Immediately, is it not true? Because we identify with the place. Similarly, Krishna also, hey, Vrindavan Wale. Hey, who is telling? Who is calling me? You know, Krishna becomes attentive. It's a Vrindavan Wale like that. That is the reason why we sing Jaya Radha Madhava. First you call Radha and Krishna becomes attentive. And then Kunja Bihari. You remind him of his place where he has Kunjas in Vrindavan. And then Gopi Jana Vallabha. Now you remind him of all the gopis who are the topmost devotees. And then Girivara Dari finished. Because he lifted the Govardhan Hill, every day he goes to Govardhan to play pastimes with his covered boys and cows and calves. If you say Girivara Dari, Krishna cannot avoid coming. Immediately has to come. And then Braja Jana Ranjana, one who gives delight to the hearts of all the Vrajavasis. Yashoda Nandana, Braja Jana Ranjana. See, here Krishna's name is not directly said, but you say everything that will bring Krishna. Amazing song, no? That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote it, Prabhupada loved it. Prabhupada, as you said, Krishna doesn't harm anyone, but in Bhagavad Gita he also says, those who turn away from me go down and down in hell. How is that? How to understand? That is also purification only. See what happens to the soul. Nainam chindanti shastrani viseno nainam dahati pavak. There is no harm for the soul actually. Even if somebody cuts the body also, even if somebody dies also, the soul doesn't get harmed. But the soul undergoes torture in different places, which is like a wild dream, like a nightmare for the soul in this material world. Actually, only one moment we are away from the spiritual world, and that is equal to millions of years in the material world. But it's like a wild nightmare dream. Like we suffer in a night dream. Any of you had experience of a dog chasing after you in the night? Any of you had a dream? Your experience? Yeah. Isn't it? Very fast, it's running, running. You run and you are sweating. And then at last the dog catches you. Your thighs are your hand, you know. And then you scream, ah, I shut, then you get up. Then you find there is no doll. Isn't it? So the material world is like that for the living entity. It's like a wild dream only. Because living entity is pure and living entity is aloof from the body. And he can never be harmed because the soul is also Sachidananda actually. Prabhupada writes it elsewhere in Kunti Maharani's purports. He says, like when a tiger is tearing the body of a deer, that deer may be afraid that I am finished now. He is not finished. He will leave the body. The tiger is only tearing the dress. So he leaves the dress and goes and accepts another dress, another body. So in that sense, although Krishna, actually the greater pain than death is forgetfulness of Krishna. Because the greatest curse in the material world is forgetfulness of Krishna. Because that is what keeps us going in the material world. On and on, enjoying foolish delights, material things. So that's why devotees never pray to Krishna, please don't give me death, please don't give me disease or old age, don't give me pain. No. Devotees only pray, please don't give me forgetfulness. Don't give me lack of remembrance of you. That's the main thing. Avismriti, tvacharanaravinde, bhave bhave mestu bhavat prasadat. Let me never forget you. Let me always remember you, Krishna. That's the prayer of a devotee. Ideal prayer. Because if you remember Krishna, even the miseries don't appear as miseries for you anymore. You can take it as His grace for bringing us close to Him. You see? So in this way, I have completed the whole Kunti book now. This is the last lecture today, isn't it? So, my purpose was, ದ ಟೀಚಿಂಗ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಕ್ವೀನ್ ಕುಂತಿ ಬುಕ್ ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ಟೀಚ್ ಒನ್ ಡಿವೋಷನ್ ಟು ಕೃಷ್ಣ, ಅನ್ ಅಟ್ರಾಕ್ಷನ್ ಟು ಕೃಷ್ಣ, ವಿಚ್ ಈಸ್ ಮೋಸ್ಟ್ ಎಸೆನ್ಷಿಯಲ್ ಫಾರ್ ಎನಿ ಒನ್ ಹೂ ವಾಂಟ್ಸ್ ಟು ಗೋ ಬ್ಯಾಕ್ ಟು ಸ್ಪಿರಿಚುವಲ್ ವರ್ಲ್ಡ್. ಸೊ ವೆನ್ ಐ ವಾಸ್ ಥಿಂಕಿಂಗ್, ಐ ಗಿವ್ ಸೋ ಮೆನಿ ಲೆಕ್ಚರ್ಸ್ ಇನ್ ಸೋ ಮೆನಿ ಪ್ಲೇಸಸ್, ಆಫ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಟೈಮ್ಸ್ ಒನ್ಸ್ ದ ಲೆಕ್ಚರ್ ಇಸ್ ಓವರ್, ಇಟ್ಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಅನ್ಲೈಕ್ಲಿ ಸಂಬಡಿ ಮೇ ಟೇಕ್ ದೋಸ್ ರೆಕಾರ್ಡಿಂಗ್ಸ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಹಿಯರ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಇನ್ ಅ ಡೆವಲಪ್, ಅಂಡ್ ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಇಯರ್ಸ್ ಆರ್ ಪಾಸಿಂಗ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಅವರ್ ಗುರು ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ಹಿಮ್ಸೆಲ್ಫ್ ರಾಜನಾಥ ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ಪ್ರೊಡ್ಯೂಸ್ ಥೌಸಂಡ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಲೆಕ್ಚರ್ಸ್, ವಿ ಡೋಂಟ್ ಹವ್ ಟೈಮ್ ಟು ಕಂಪ್ಲೀಟ್ ದಮ್. ಸೊ 9 ಲೆಕ್ಚರ್ಸ್ ಆರ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಅ ಟೈನಿ ರಿಫ್ಲೆಕ್ಷನ್ ಆಫ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಲೆಕ್ಚರ್ಸ್. ಹಿ ಇಸ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಅ ಸನ್, ಐ ಆಮ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಅ ಸನ್ ರೇ. ಸೊ ದೆನ್ ಐ ವಾಸ್ ಥಿಂಕಿಂಗ್, ಹೌ ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ದ ಇಂಪಾರ್ಟೆನ್ಸ್ ಬಿ ಗಿವನ್ ಟು ದಿಸ್ ವಂಡರ್ಫುಲ್ ಬುಕ್ ಆಫ್ ಕ್ವೀನ್ ಕುಂತಿ, ವಿಚ್ ಕಂಟೈನ್ಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಇಂಪಾರ್ಟೆಂಟ್ philosophical points, concepts about Krishna, about our relationship to him. So I spoke on verse by verse, completed the book, and we are also making transcriptions of this, which we will be giving to the preachers. So the preachers may go through it and they may teach to the devotees, the voices, in future, or they may play the recording and then they may speak in between. But what I have done is take a purport of Prabhupada and take the cream points and then elaborate on them, each of them. That's what I have done, with more elaboration. To Prabhupada once said, write purports to my purports. Prabhupada says this in one place. That's what you should do, Prabhupada said. You should. And what did Prabhupada do? He also wrote purports to Acharya's purports. Now we should write purports to purports. So that's what I did. So if Krishna willing, I may compile all this and make a book. I have a secret desire in the heart to make a book called From Bhava to Bhava. Nice, no? Yeah, from law to love. So material world is a place of law and spiritual world is a place of love. So that's the book, From Law to Love, Bhava to Bhava. So of course, to bring out the book, I will have to go through all the transcriptions and correct and everything, because I observed one thing: if you bring out like a book, then people find it more accessible. If you keep it in soft copy, you know, many times soft is always soft only. It's in somewhere in the ether somewhere. When you want, it doesn't come within your grips immediately. Or you bring a computer, battery gets over. Thinking Krishna willing, and if there is blessing of the Guru and Acharyas, and if it is really a good work, then it may come out in future. But this book is a very important book for devotees. I can tell you, when I was in my IIT days, Bhaktirasanta Maharaj, while he was teaching Bhagavad Gita, when I asked him for the books, first he gave me TLC, one of the first books he gave me, because I had a lot of doubts on Mayavad. Then all the Mayavad dust was cleared up. Then after that I asked him what book to read, he gave me Coming Back. So I finished Coming Back. So reincarnation I clearly understood and everything. So then he told me, see, you understand the jiva is not God, but the jiva is transmigrating and suffering from various bodies, explain. And then he told me one day, this Kunti is the most important book, he said, amongst all the books. And he himself has spoken it in many places, in Bangalore and Kanpur and many other places. He said, if somebody tells me speak something, I'll speak from this book, he said. It's a very, very important book. And he said, you have to deeply understand it. And he said, the result of reading this book is, you will become a genuine devotee, you will develop deep faith in Krishna. And I read it. I read this book several times. And I have also spoken in many places. And I can tell you confidently, it made a turning point for me in my life, the messages of this book. Like one or two things I'll tell you, which was a turning point. One was Kunti's detachment and attachment. Detachment to relatives and attachment to Krishna. Similarly, Bhishma, at that point Prabhupada explains the wrestler example. How somebody, Krishna wants to fight with his devotee, and he brings his devotee to this world. So like that, many Lord and his devotee are attached to one another, transcendentally. In this way, both are called Nivritta Gunavritti. Prabhupada says that. And Krishna's nature, devotee's nature, everything comes out in this book. Very wonderful. I don't know, actually our voices, we are asking devotees to hear so much and read so much, and preachers are also coming. It's very difficult for people to... Preachers also tell me, Prabhuji, when will we teach this? Where is the time? You know, there is no time slot in the voice. We don't know how to do it, but we will find out. But this is a vital, I can tell you, vital book. I don't know whether in personal reading, hearing, devotees can read the book and see the transcript or something. We have to do something. But it's a very important book. All of you make sure that you grasp this wonderful purpose of Prabhupada with the proper understanding, then it will help you not only lifelong, beyond your life also. Because Prabhupada gives such understanding as level of Kunti, Devaki, Yashoda. It's going from reverential admiration to spontaneous affection. You know, like that Prabhupada explains, powerful. This kind of depth of love for Krishna, systematically, I have never read anywhere in any organization books. Only our acharyas have given it, and Prabhupada has very easily simplified it for us. Even more made it easy. Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, thank you very much.